Welcome to our AGMD radio show. We are just so privileged to have Carrie Mextroth here with us today. And for those of you who don't know her, she was on our parent call, which just took place a little while ago. Carrie, are you there?
I am. Hi, how are you?
Oh, I am terrific. What we typically do with these programs is we're going to have callers listen in, and then we're going to open up the lines at a certain point for people to share their comments, experiences, or any questions they may have. Is that all right with you?
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. So give us a little bit of an introduction on who you are, your background, and your affiliation with functional gastromotility disorders.
My name is Carrie Mextroth, and my son is 7 and was diagnosed with one of his motility disorders when he was 4. He has been diagnosed with functional constipation or chronic constipation due to colonic dysmotility and rectal dysmotility, and he also has GERD, and I myself have IBS-C, and I started advocating probably about 2016, beginning of, for all functional GI and motility disorders.
Can you give people an idea of what functional gastrointestinal motility disorders are? A lot of people see that word functional, and it can give the illusion that that means that people are totally functional and are able to live their normal lives because it says functional.
Yes. Right. Actually, it kind of means opposite, which I've said from day one, it should be unfunctional or dysfunctional, because basically there are no biophysical or biochemical abnormalities with the GI system. It's dysfunction in how the GI system functions. Colonic dysmotility, go ahead, Mary Angela.
No, I was just going to say, can you give some examples, too, of what these might be, what they would encompass?
Yep, for, like, colonic dysmotility, which is also called slow colonic transit, is somewhere in the colon, and it can be different for each person, but somewhere in the colon or multiple places do not have the contractions, either high amplitude contractions or I want to say there's also unsynchronized smaller contractions, but those contractions aren't there to make the stool move forward. Therefore, it is a functional disorder because it doesn't function properly, even though everything is there to function properly.
So some examples. Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. What are some examples, like irritable bowel, which you said that you have, would fall under that? Can you indicate any others?
IBS-C, IBS-D, those are both functional disorders that can have issues with motility, but don't necessarily have issues with motility. GERD, which is gastroesophageal reflux disease, that is also another motility disorder, which my son has as well. Let's see, there's functional diarrhea, functional abdominal pain, which is basically just abdominal pain that has no explanation. Like, there's pain, but they can't figure out why, because there's no abnormality.
So you're a patient with IBS-C. How long have you been a patient with that?
Oh, I actually was just diagnosed last year with IBS-C, and, I had always, throughout my whole life, even from childhood, had issues with constipation, but just kind of thought it was normal. And I started having lots of pains in my stomach. They checked my, they did like a ultrasound of my gallbladder because they thought that was what was wrong. And they checked everything out and everything was fine. So it was diagnosed as a functional GI disorder, which was IBS.
Now, is there anyone else in your family besides you and your son who have a functional GI issue?
There are people in my family that have chronic constipation or have had issues with constipation. A couple of my nephews have. My older son had issues with constipation when he was younger, but none of them have been diagnosed with a functional GI disorder. My husband has been diagnosed with GERD, and I believe his father has either acid reflux or GERD.
Interesting. So let's talk about your son, Weston. When he started getting sick, what is he like? Let us get to know Weston a little bit more.
Well, first of all, he's amazing. He's a handful. He is kind of a little firecracker. You know, he's a very good boy, but he will test every button that you have. But I think that's kind of typical of most boys, maybe. He actually, when he was first born, he did okay for about the first week, and I was breastfeeding. But then when we went for his weight check, like, he wasn't gaining weight. And so we started going for weight checks. I believe it was every like 2 days. So we would go twice a week for weight checks and he still wasn't gaining weight. And when he was about 5 weeks old, he still had not gained weight. He wasn't really losing, but he wasn't gaining. Other than that, he was, developing normally other than his weight. And they ended up having me stop breastfeeding because I was breastfeeding and occasionally supplementing with formula. And they had me quit breastfeeding completely. And we tried multiple different formulas, and none of them made him gain weight. Like, he still wasn't gaining weight. So they ended up switching him to Neocate, which is a, I believe it's an amino acid-based formula, and he didn't have to break anything down. So, like, the formula is already broken down so small that he didn't, his tummy didn't have to process it. It didn't have to break it down. So all he had to do was absorb it. And he finally started gaining weight at that point. And prior to that, he had, you know, vomiting and diarrhea, like, projectile vomiting and diarrhea, and they thought that was okay, it was normal, but they ended up testing, they did a stool sample and tested that, and he was diagnosed with malabsorption syndrome, hence why he went on the formula that all he had to do was absorb, and then he started gaining weight, but once he started gaining weight, then the constipation started, and he's had constipation basically ever since.
Give us a little bit, and he's how old now?
He is 7.5.
7.5. Can you give us an idea then of that journey of getting diagnosed from the time he was 3 to all of a sudden finding this diagnosis, how you responded as a parent, how it affected your family, and how it has affected Weston? I know, that's a real long question.
Yeah, that's okay. At first, you know, I kept telling the doctor, like, he's not pooping. And they say, well, it's normal. You know, some kids go 2 or 3 times a day. Some kids don't go for a day or two. And we were actually getting words of, like, 7 to 10 days sometimes where he wasn't going. And the pediatricians kept telling me it was normal. He had seen 2 different GIs. They were telling me it was normal. They ended up putting him on Miralax when he was 9 or 10 months old. And that helped some, but it never really helped at all. Like, I mean, we were getting more stool out, but it never really solved the issue. And he was on the Miralax up until he was about 3.5. And we had changed doctors, and I took him in. He hadn't gone in about 10 days, and I gave him an enema. And, you know, it says right on the box, like, if it doesn't produce a bowel movement, take him into the urgent care, the ER, get doctors, you know, opinion on it. So that happened. I took him in to a local ER that didn't specialize in pediatrics. And that GI doctor said, well, you know, his tummy's soft, because that was one of our major issues, is that all throughout this, like, his tummy, when you think of constipation, you think, you know, your tummy's hard and it really hurts. And, you know, he didn't have a lot of pain, and his tummy wasn't ever really hard. So a lot of the doctors kept saying, no, you know, he's not constipated. Like I said, when he was 3.5, we went into the ER, and that doctor agreed. He said the same thing. And I said, well, you know, please prove me wrong, because I gave him this enema. He's not going. I don't know what to do. He hasn't went, and I think it was like 10 days. And he did an x-ray and was kind of mean and was like, you're not going to see what you want to see, but I'll do the x-ray. And did the x-ray, and he came back in, and he said, oh, my gosh, ma'am, I am so sorry. Get him to the children's ER, like, now. And so we took him. I came home, grabbed my husband, we went up, and they admitted him, and we had his first NG tube clean out, and had several more, you know, in the months after that. They added in different medicines. Gosh, I think we did at that point. He's been on so many, I can't hardly remember. But I think at that point we weren't doing the Miralax anymore, because it obviously wasn't, it helped, but it wasn't helping enough. So they added in lactulose, I believe it was. And, gosh, there was another one that we added in at that point. And, you know, he would go, but not. It was just never enough. He would still continue to get backed up. And we'd go in, and they would, the GI would adjust his medicines, and we'd try new regimens, and basically kept trying different regimens, you know, until they wouldn't work or if they didn't help, and then just kept adjusting them. And I don't even remember how many. That went on. We started that when he was about 3.5. And, you know, they, other than x-rays at that point, they hadn't really done anything. They said he just had functional constipation. He had just had chronic constipation. There wasn't really anything we could do, just give him these medicines. And, then his GI here, we went to another GI north of us about 1.5 hours, and he said he was withholding. He was holding his stool on purpose, which I didn't even know was a thing. Like, I didn't know that was something that could even happen. And so we, you know, upped his medicines, and they just kept upping his medicines. And we did, at that point, 6 days of 6 capfuls of Miralax. 1 capful is an adult dose. And we were doing 6 days of 6 capfuls a day, and he still was not producing anything. I think the longest time he went was, I think it was 24 days with no stool.
Oh, my God.
It's been a long time since we've done that. The most we allow him really to go is 2 days, and even that isn't okay, because he gets backed up even when he's going every day.
Is he able to eat at all?
He does. He eats nonstop for the most part, and, you know, some kids, when they when they're so backed up, they stop eating. That has never really been a thing for him. On rare occasion, his appetite does decrease, but for the most part, he eats constantly, and we are kind of stickler on his diet. Not that I don't let him have treats and that kind of thing, but it doesn't really seem to make much difference what he eats. He still gets backed up. Like, we could do fruit smoothies every day, all day, and he still gets backed up.
I know for parents it's always a challenge when they're doing toilet training for their toddlers. I can't even imagine what it was like going through that with him, where he wasn't even able to move his bowels.
It's frustrating. He sits on the potty, and we still actually do potty sit time every day after breakfast, about a half an hour after, and every day a half an hour after dinner. And he sits for 5 minutes each time. Sometimes he produces, sometimes he doesn't. But after we switched GIs, because that GI just kept upping his medicine and upping his medicine, and it wasn't doing anything, or wasn't doing enough, we changed GIs and ended up down at C.S. Mott's Children's Hospital, which is at the University of Michigan. And they did some testing. They did what's it called? The Sitzmacher study.
The Sitzmacher, yes.
And Sitzmacher study, yes. And what you do is you swallow 3 pills that have 24 little plastic, I think they call them radiopaque markers.
Yeah.
So they're markers that you can see that are visible on the X-ray. And if your child is withholding stool, all of those markers or rings will be at the child's rectum. They take an X-ray we did an X-ray on day 3 and day 7 after swallowing the markers, which with him, he couldn't swallow pills at that point. So we took the rings out and put them in applesauce, and he just ate it in a spoonful. But if they're withholding, which now from reading and learning things, withholding 9 times out of 10, they're not withholding stool on purpose. If they are withholding, they do it without even knowing that that's what they're doing. They're tightening their muscles, and they don't know that's what they're doing. They think they're trying to stool, and actually they're tightening. But unfortunately, and maybe not unfortunately, none of his markers were at his rectum. His markers were all on the complete opposite side. So he wasn't withholding. He was diagnosed at that point with slow colonic transit or colonic dysmotility, because his weren't progressing forward. They weren't even going towards his rectum. They were still, you have there's the sigmoid, which is by the rectum, and then the transverse, and then the ascending. And all of his were still in the ascending, or the majority of his were still in the ascending. And those markers stayed in there. They're supposed to all be out within 7 days. And his, I want to say it was like 28 days. And then he had fecal disimpactions a couple times under anesthesia, where they physically had to disimpact him. And that's what they had to do to get the remaining rings out. And it was like, I think it was like 28 days that they were still there.
It's to know that the child has been enduring this for so long. Of course, in his mind, he probably knows no other way, no other life. But I am sure this has impacted him greatly. How does he do in school?
He does okay at school. He, as far as academic-wise, he does really well. He's not so much of a he likes people and he's friendly to people, but he gets very frustrated quickly. And I think some of that is to do with, you know, his stomach hurts a lot and he plays through it. He tries to ignore it or downplay it like it doesn't hurt. And gets frustrated, but he, for the most part, does well in school. We started play therapy, counseling for him. Gosh, it was three years in March that we started doing that. And at first he went every week. And then we were down to, every other week he would go to play therapy, and actually we're just now increasing it again. Because he needs a little bit more time there to kind of get his frustrations out and work through things. But the counseling and the play therapy has been amazing, not just for him, because it gives him time to kind of play, and they act out their emotions through play. So he's able to do that there. And then, you know, she's taught me a lot of different ways to deal with him and manage his anger and help him manage his frustrations. As far as like with Weston, if you tell Weston, no, don't touch that, he's probably going to touch it like 75 more times. So his counselor suggested that instead of telling him what not to do, like don't touch that, say, hey, keep your hands off of that. So just kind of changing the way that we talk to him, and the way that we instruct him on what we need from him. Like I used to say, well, I want you to go in the bathroom. I want you to sit on the potty. Well, it's not a want. It's a need. I need you to do this. You have to do this. I need you to do this. So, you know, just the little bit of change in words from me, has helped him, and working with his counselor, you know, has been amazing for him and myself.
That's huge. It's so subtle, and yet it can be so significant with just a tone or the wording of something. Can you talk a little bit more intensely about that play therapy? What are some of the things that they do there?
She has, oh my gosh, two rooms just full of toys. There are, you know, dolls and figurines and sand table, and she has, what do you call it? It's like silly putty, sort of, but there's different hardnesses. So, like, if you're really frustrated, there's, like, a harder one, and you can kind of squeeze on it. It's not, like, a slimy one. And so there's different strengths, I guess you could call it, that, you know, they can just squeeze. Or one of her big things when we first started, I reached out because there was an 8-month waiting list for the counseling at the hospital that we go to. And so I reached out and found one more locally. And one of the first things that she had us do, because he was very angry and he was starting to hit me. He was 4 years old and he was hitting me. He would be mad. We would be at the hospital and he would hit me. And I mean, I can't have a 4-year-old hitting me. Number one, it's not okay. Number two, I didn't want him to continue to do that. And then I'm a very small person. I'm like 4'10", maybe. And my 14-year-old's bigger than I am. So I didn't want him to continue to grow up and be 12 years old and hitting me still. So, you know, she gave us some ideas on how he could really get his frustrations out. And two of the things that really helped him, she has boxes, just regular old random boxes, all different shapes, sizes. And she took different colored duct tape and duct taped all around them. So they're all different color, crazy looking boxes with duct tape, and he literally would kick and hit those boxes and throw them in her room. She has two separate rooms, and he would just like whip the boxes into the wall or kick the boxes into the wall. And so we set up an area at home in our hallway that has his boxes. And he doesn't use them as much anymore, but he still occasionally does. He'll get mad about something, and he'll walk down the hallway and whack a box with his foot. And, you know, it taught him that, you know, you have to take your frustrations out on something else. You can't hit mom, or you can't hit your brother or dad or whoever. And that, you know, really helped him a lot. And we also got him a punching bag. My mother got him a punching bag for Christmas a few years ago, and he likes that. He can, you know, be mad about whatever and just go sit in his room and punch the punching bag, and it helps him kind of work his muscles, and that helps him to get out frustrations and not take them out on people he loves that he shouldn't be taking it out on.
Yeah. It's so hard as a mom, where I am pretty sure from what you have indicated that you're the super mom who does it all and is caring for him, and then to have him hit you or lash out at you, the hurt must be so deep.
You know, it did, but I also knew that he wasn't doing it because, I mean, he was mad at me, sort of, because I was the one that was making him go to the hospital or making him go to the appointments or, you know, making him take medicine. But we kind of got to a point where he understands more now that, you know, I'm not doing it because I want him to take medicine or I want him to go to the hospital. I'm doing it because if we don't, he's going to be sicker. So he kind of understands that now. But at 3 and 4 years old, he didn't get that. He didn't understand that, you know, and he still struggles with it sometimes, even now.
Yeah. Tell me, when Weston isn't home, do you go down and use the punching bag yourself?
I don't, but I probably should.
Oh, my gosh. So how at the school is the administration and are the peers within the school, are they understanding? Are they kind to him? Do they even know?
Yes, yep, they do know. We actually, when we first looked into enrolling him in kindergarten at our local public school, they wanted him to have a parapro with him, which is like an aide. And they wanted the aide to be with him basically at all times. And if he had developmental issues or academic issues where he needed someone with him all the time, I would have been fine with that. But I didn't want him singled out because of a GI issue. It wasn't, he didn't need somebody to be with him all the time. He just needs someone to remind him, like, hey, you need to drink your water. Hey, you need to drink your Gatorade. If his tummy is hurting, well, go ahead, get your heat pack out of your backpack, and you can warm that up in the microwave and put it on your tummy. Or, you know, did you go try and sit on the potty? So we actually found it's a public school, but it is a one-room schoolhouse, like the old-fashioned one-room schoolhouses. And there's 14 students right now. Last year, I think there was 16. But his teachers, there's two teachers and a TA, and they've been amazing with him. I know some schools, like a regular public school, you would need like an IEP or a 504 plan in order to have them follow the guidelines of, you know, if he needs to go to the bathroom, he needs to be able to go whenever necessary, or, you know, he has to have his Gatorade with him or his water with him at all times. There's a certain amount that he has to drink every day. And the one-room schoolhouse doesn't require us to have an IEP or a 504 plan. I just send in at the beginning of the school year, this is what he does. You know, these are his meds he's on, which the medicines, thank goodness, are all done at home. Those don't have to be done at school. but I put in there the requirements for his liquids, like how much water he has to drink during the day and how much water or Gatorade he has to drink during the day. And they have, at his school now, they have like 20-minute increments where they do like, they'll do reading for 20 minutes and then they rotate groups and they'll do math for 20 minutes. So basically every 20 minutes, one of his instructors is saying, hey, bud, did you drink some of your water? Hey, did you drink some of your Gatorade? And if he was at a regular public school with only one instructor and 30 students, there's no way that could make sure that he was doing those types of things. So it's been super helpful to have him where he's at, where I know we're all on the same page as what, as far as what his requirements are and, you know, needs that he has as far as like, oh, if his stomach is hurting, he may need to go sit on the potty and take a couple extra.